Good morning, everyone. It does work. Welcome to our session this morning. We're going to get started here pretty quickly. Just a quick show of hands. I was wondering if I could find out how many people in the room are considering themselves business decision makers. Okay, and then IT group and developers. Awesome. Okay, great. Any records managers in the room? Wow, that's awesome. Okay, great. Well, let's get started. We're here to talk about certified records management in the cloud. We work with a company called Gimel. I'll get into a background on us in just a moment. You may know us by the people with the crazy tie-dye shirts on the trade show floor. If you don't know what that means, visit us in booth 951 and you too can be the proud owner of a tie-dye shirt. Today we're going to be going through a quick introduction of the two speakers, and we're going to be getting into the what's, why's, how's, and today the best part of it is going to be a demonstration of some of the topics that we're going to be discussing this morning. We got about an hour and 15 minutes, of which we're going to leave probably 10 to 15 minutes at the end for Q&A. So just to get started this morning, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about the two people that are up on stage. That's myself, one of my favorite topics, and my colleague Jonathan Brandenburg. My name's Art Bellis. I'm proud to work for a company called Gimel, and my role is that I head the sales group at Gimel, as well as our business alliance group, which includes people like Microsoft, Iron Mountain, K2, on and on and on. So I came to Gimel 2 years ago. I was a founder of a records management software company where I was worked for 15 years in the software business, so I've been just about a little under 20 years in the content and records management business. I joined Gimel as they were going through some evolution we're going to talk about in a minute. And the main focus of my attention for the last 5 or 6 years has been working in the SharePoint Microsoft ecosystem around content and records management. And it's been amazing to watch the evolution that's gone on and the quantum shift in the ECM market that's taken place in the last 5 or 6 years to focus on SharePoint. So we're excited to be in the middle of that ecosystem. Jonathan is our director of engineering, many years with the, so there you go, 8 years, we do sign language up here too, 8 years with Gimel, leads our engineering group, our development center of excellence in Dallas, Texas, and Jonathan will be running us through a demonstration of what we're going to be talking about this morning. So Gimel's a solutions company, and when I joined them 2 years ago, they were making a shift. Gimel has long been known as expert enterprise content and records management consultants and systems integrators. And they were expert across the spectrum of technologies. So they've in their background, they've been EMC Document and Partner of the Year. We've implemented some of the largest OpenText and Documentum implementations in the world related to records management. But as with all of us, we saw the quantum shift that was happening towards SharePoint. And our business has really shifted in that direction. So 2 years ago, we launched a product division within our company. And that product division was focused on extending native capabilities of SharePoint to include improvements in governance, compliance, and physical records management. How we got to be there was, as experts in content and records management, we were actually hired by Microsoft and their SharePoint engineering team to perform a gap analysis on the early designs of SharePoint 2010, at that time called Office 14. And the gap analysis we performed was against the leading records management certifications in the world. Those are the DoD 5015.2, which is the US Department of Defense records management standard, MOREC, which is the European standard, and VERS, which is the Australian standard. These standards are different than ISO, where the companies become certified against ISO, as opposed to a technology, whereas this is an actual technology certification, where there are use cases that you need to be able to demonstrate with your product to be able to meet these standards. So Microsoft was curious, with the quantum leap they made in content and records management functionality between MOS and 2010, they wanted to know how close they were and how much further they would need to go to meet these international certifications. So when our team was deployed, our experts went in and did a review and outlined about 27 main gaps in their current design that would prevent them from meeting DoD certification. We had an inkling that Microsoft might even hire us because we developed the records management functionality for the EMC Documentum platform before as experts. So we got an inkling that Microsoft might actually want to hire us. So to put ourselves in a position to maybe get that business, we went beyond the gap analysis and actually put together design documents that would actually show, if they follow the current designs, how they could extend on that work to meet those certifications. And each of those design documents were delivered as part of the gap analysis. The good news was they said, we agree with these designs. If we went down this road, we would follow these designs. We were surprised 6 months later, as was the market, to hear that they decided not to go after these certifications, and they left it to partners to do. So we had what any ISV in the Microsoft ecosystem would chew their right arm off for, which is pre-validated design documents that we had to go to market. And the big difference between our DoD certification and the competitors in the market is that we went through the DoD certification with one thing in mind, which is all content stays in SharePoint. All the other certifications integrate from the outside in, take content and put it somewhere else. That's a huge differentiator. It's one of the biggest barriers to the cloud that there is if you have multiple infrastructures that's holding your content, how do you unify that before you take it to the cloud? The whole premise behind our design is that SharePoint is a perfectly good content collaboration and records management platform. What we needed to do is close in some white space in what they had delivered as their base platform to be able to meet that certification. And therefore, not only are you only paying for that upside, you're only getting that little bit more that is required to meet that certification, as opposed to the redundancy of a whole separate content management environment. Often a Java-based environment obviously requires a lot of support. So our content governance and records management solutions was the first product that we brought to market. The second one was our information governance components, and these are all about driving consistency and deploying a SharePoint platform. They're also designed to drive user adoption, making things easy on users to get content into SharePoint, making sure we're leveraging all the native capabilities of SharePoint to make sure it goes to the right place, it has the right amount of metadata, it is being assigned the right amount of permissions and securities. Last fall, we acquired a company called ERP Link. And ERP Link's role in our solution is that it is the bridge between the SAP environment and SharePoint as a document archive repository for SAP. So it provides interoperability between those two solutions and allows you to start driving business processes that the genesis may be your ERP system in SAP, but you want to be able to build applications that leverage that metadata, but utilize SharePoint as a platform for driving document processes and business processes. So ERP Link and our components for information governance and compliance are really key elements to a platform extension to SharePoint that allow you to consolidate some of your legacy content applications that are right now siloed and off to the side. So it enables you as business owners and as developers to create rich environments that have compliance and governance baked into the platform. Oh, don't let me forget. How many people here have heard of Iron Mountain? Okay, so Iron Mountain are those big trucks full of boxes that you see whizzing up and down the street. They kind of are the 800-pound gorilla in every records management discussion because they have just about all the boxes for the Fortune 500 companies. I just about forgot. I don't know how I could have done that. We also integrated physical records management into the SharePoint environment in conjunction with Iron Mountain in a project that was delivered to Microsoft Legal and Corporate Affairs. Unfortunately, scheduling here has been a little bit sketchy because as we speak right now, they're talking about that upstairs in the Reef Ballroom about their hybrid record strategy. And that is fully inclusive of the components that I just described to you from Gimmel. So combining physical and electronic records, one pane of glass gives a user access to the information they need to do their job. Compliance rules are applied consistently across all media types. And then it's also joined to an SAP environment. So the business processes related to records can all be automated directly out of the ERP system and all the way through the records management lifecycle process. So what is it we're talking about today? We're talking about the cloud. We were kind of chuckling with all the difficulties that the folks are having with their connectivity. I think the cloud is one of those things that all of us want to do and some of us have issues with. But let's talk about the definition of cloud. To most, the cloud means SaaS. So the early deployments of SaaS technologies such as Salesforce and and the like, you know, allow you to understand that it's a multi-tenant environment. Many people share the same infrastructure. Applications are deployed very quickly. Upgrades are very seamless. Gives us the ability to rent things on a month-to-month basis. On the other hand, there's private clouds. We've done extensive work with the Microsoft team in federal, in the US here, because of some of the issues that they had with US federal content going up into a multi-tenant environment. So they did a lot of work architecting private clouds so that each of the agencies could have their own dedicated environment where there's enough people that would warrant having a dedicated environment and opening up more capabilities than was allowed in a standard O365 environment. So those are what we call evolutionary steps, you know, towards more of cloud. But when we talk about the real clouds that we hear and all the documentation we read about, we're really talking about three different types of clouds. There's software as a service, there's platform as a service, and there's infrastructure as a service. So software as a service, you know, as an example, would be an Office 365 environment. If you're looking at a platform as a service, Windows Azure Compute is really the example that Microsoft would use to explain what that would mean. And then infrastructure as a service is the Azure virtual machines that we're hearing about. So any one of those could make up a cloud strategy. And as a matter of fact, I would argue that probably it's going to be a mixture of those things that will end up being the environment that you folks will be wrestling with over the next few years. So when we look at this environment, I really want to talk about what it is that's driving people to the cloud. I don't know about you, but I got teenage daughters, and I have never in a million years would I have imagined myself being as technically competent as they are at the young age that they're at. They do things so naturally with technology now. It's just assumed. Like, you know, I work in technology, and if I have to ask them a question about how do you do that, they look at me with just this look. It's just, you know, it's like, are you stupid? But the generation that we're working with now, it's about they want it and they want it now. And really, we believe that the users are the ones that are gonna drive the need for this type of technology, because it's difficult in the environment that we're working in now for IT to keep up, to be able to deliver the types of solutions that people want within the time frame that people want it. So the ability to instantly produce applications that drive value to the users is really the background to where I believe the real inertia is going to come from around the cloud. There's also the CFOs are looking ways to lower cost. Overall, when you look at the infrastructure costs, the discussions we get into with CIOs, the biggest message that we take out of those is we're being asked to do more with less. So the budgets are going down, but the expectations are going up. And how can they do that? How can they move to the latest technologies with the burden of all the infrastructure and everything that goes with those upgrades? So they're looking for ways to lower the cost, the overall cost of application support. CIOs, they're looking at trying to bring things to production faster. So the turnaround time, in our experience at Gimel, you know, the proper planning of an enterprise content management rollout, it's not an over the weekend event. It sometimes is months and if not years, depending on the size of the organization and the amount of information that's being consolidated. And with the rapid movement of technology forward, by the time you finish implementing a version, then all of a sudden you're moving to the next version, and there's a whole upgrade process that goes with that. So trying to keep up with the amount of change that's going on and the demand of the users is very, very difficult. So all of these things are the drivers that has everybody talking about the cloud. It's not just in the Microsoft ecosystem. Everywhere you go, the cloud is the next thing. And we agree with that. We agree that the cloud is something that end users are demanding. It goes well beyond the topic we're talking about from an enterprise content and records management perspective. It's social computing, which is a real topic around the keynote. You know, the acquisition of Yammer shows just how important social is going to be to Microsoft. It is really the thing that is going to bring together the users and the business owners in trying to drive efficiencies within the organization. Chief marketing officers are really looking at ways to communicate more efficiently. So the whole notion of unified communications in the cloud is very, very attractive. How do we get our message out internally? How do we drive consistency in the way that we communicate our value proposition both to the outside world and the inside world. And those kinds of things, all of these C-level people are meeting and talking about the same things, although the language that they use is often different. But at the end of the day, the CFO is the one that's saying, you know, we have a limited amount of budget with which to run our business with, and we can't, if we're going to innovate and move forward, we can't be spending all of our money supporting old applications. We need to be fresh, we need to be new, we need to be delivering new features to our users, and we need to be doing it at a lower cost. So the cloud makes that promise, and as I see it, it's keeping those promises to a large degree. But the reality is, the practical approach that we need to look at is, we have to look at what it offers us in terms of value, but then the groups that generally have the questions are the governance, risk, and compliance group. And what they're talking about is, yeah, but what about? And the yeah, but what about part is what we're going to talk about today. How many people here have heard of a trade association called ARMA? Okay, so ARMA has about 12 to 15,000 members worldwide. And it's the Records Managers Association. And recently in their Information Management Journal, there was a study that was held that was done by Forrester Research. And what it was is it was the overall notion of information management in the cloud. So we've done some extracts from that that research. And basically what organizations are telling is their SaaS usage and their plans for that. So more than two-thirds are not going to be implementing any level of records management in the cloud in the next 18 months. So basically, and there's some other statistics behind that, but 21% won't undertake it for at least two more years. So what that means is in the short term, as we are looking at all the options that are available in today's version of Office 365, which we'll focus on today, and the next generation, we have to deal with the practical reality is that part of the decision-making group within our organization is saying, not right now. Having said that, when we look at the factors that are really causing that concern, some of them are operational, and to a large degree when they say operational, they're talking about what impact will this have on our ability to deliver in the area of e-discovery, in the ability to do disposition of content, those kinds of critical elements that the GRC group think about. They're focused on those as impediments to this cloud rollout of records management. There are privacy concerns. So I'm from Canada, if you haven't picked it up in my accent. And whereas down in the US, the major driver behind records management is you guys sue each other at an unbelievable rate, in Canada and in the EU, they really talk about privacy as being the real drivers for good information management. So it's been ingrained in their laws in Canada and the EU about the role of government and their requirement to conduct themselves in a way where they will protect the privacy of the constituents that they represent. So two different things with equal amount of priority, you know, they still need to be able to address those. So it's not that in the US you don't care about privacy, you're just more afraid of being sued. In Canada, we're not afraid of being sued, we just have privacy concerns that are a little higher. But either way, these are the things that are sort of speed bumps to getting us where we need to go. Legal concerns are, when I talk to the general counsel, which I do through our relationship with Iron Mountain and through the work that we do with Microsoft, we get a chance to sit with the CIOs and the general counsel with fairly good regularity. And the general counsel talk about the challenges the cloud presents for them in terms of e-discovery. So, because of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and how they really raised the bar in 2005, you know, the general counsel is now looking at these things and saying, how can I prove to the courts that the records that I say is destroyed are actually not there? Anybody ever heard of forensic recovery of content? Think for a minute if the courts were to open it up to forensic recovery of a SaaS environment. What that does, what the implications to other companies would be. This is the stuff that the lawyers talk about. So when you start thinking about that, it's not that there isn't, it's not founded in reality, but I really believe that they're thinking of things at such a grandiose level, but it's still the issue that people are saying not right now. And they're waiting for the answer from people like us to say, well, there is a way of doing this. There is a way of getting to where we need to go. Integration concerns is the other part. Most enterprise content management platforms leverage integrations to line of business systems and other technologies to drive efficiencies. So when we're doing that, when we're bringing these environments and saying we're going to take them to the cloud, how many connections do we now need to redo, and how limited are they in our ability to connect and do that? So doing those assessments, it's not just we're going to switch this off and we're going to move it over here, because there's far too many technology and business implications related to that. So we really think that clients that we're talking to are going to be taking a crawl, walk, run approach. They're going to be finding the best candidate business applications that will move to the cloud, and the ones that will have the least amount of complexity from an integration standpoint and the lowest risk profile. So those would be candidate business applications to take to the cloud first. But the reality is, people are looking at things a little more horizontally, and I'll talk to you about that in just a moment. But the overall message that we're saying is, Jonathan and I were talking about it when we were preparing this thing, and we're thinking to ourselves, I wonder what it was like 35 or 40 years ago when Iron Mountain walked through the door and started talking to the general counsel about taking their records and taking them off site and putting them somewhere else. I'll bet you the same kind of concerns came up, which is over my dead body. I need to know exactly where my records are. As if something that's inside my data center is any more secure than it is in the cloud. Same way as, you know, is the building that I have my records in, physical records in, any more secure or fire safe or earthquake safe than the facilities that are purposely built for that by Iron Mountain? So it's the same sort of analogy, only fast forward 40 years later, and we're talking about it at a digital level now. So I think to some degree, this stuff is just going to naturally go away in terms of concerns, because the technology will evolve. The business processes will evolve. We'll understand the gaps in our governance, risk, and compliance issues that we can close off, either with business process or with technology. And we will make our way to the cloud with our records. It's just, in our estimation, it's going to take a little time. So when we say a little time, I look at this as kind of like politics. It's perception is reality. So it doesn't matter whether all this worry is real. It really has to do with whether they're going to say yes, whether they're going to let us put our records up in the cloud. And if they're not going to let us put our records up in the cloud, how can we leverage the cloud in some way to drive the efficiencies that we know we need? So current Office 365, how many people here are currently using Office 365? Okay, so the current version of Office 365 SharePoint has very, very limited records management functionality. So if you do a side-by-side comparison to on-prem SharePoint versus in the cloud SharePoint, they're very distant cousins. You can do manage in place, but at the end of the day, the rich functionality that comes out of the box with SharePoint 2010 is just not there in Office 365 today. So there just isn't, I don't know many people. Is there anybody here who's doing records management in Office 365 today? I didn't think so. So it was like everything else. It was a good step in the right direction, but there were some ways to go. So given that Office 365 in its current form doesn't have it, the next thing that generally is asked by the risk managers is, you know, will we be able to, you know, have the kinds of certifications that will allow me to stand up in court and say that we do things the same way all the time, that we forensically destroy our content, all the things that they use to deflect the litigations. They want to know that, and that comes from certifications. So when we talk about certifications, we started at the beginning to talk about DoD 5015 and MOREC. Those are the kinds of certifications that the risk managers understand. They don't understand what it means at on the ground level. They just know that they can quote DoD 5015, and that will mean a certain thing in the court of law, and they look for those certifications. And current Office 365 is not certifiable. And our early view of Office 365 in 2013 also has limitations to being able to certify as well. So again, it's going to need some partner involvement, some help in getting it across the finish line to become certified. So just going into out-of-the-box multi-tenant Office 365 either now or in the next generation is probably unlikely if one of those requirements is for it to be certified. And general counsels and compliance officers, there's a lot of weight in where content goes simply because of the risk element. So we have a strong belief that governance, legal, and risk managers want to know where their records are. And so when I say want to know where their records are, there's this maybe founded, maybe not, belief that if it's in an on-prem solution, it's more secure than if it's in the cloud. Because a lot of people don't understand the cloud. They don't understand the amount of security and infrastructure that goes into creating a cloud environment. But having said that, it's again, perception is reality. So until we can get past that barrier, as the research shown, 80% are not going to the cloud anytime soon. So what do we need to do to get there? What we've seen in the discussions that we've held is that the clients that are looking to move to the cloud have already done that for their email and their collaboration environment already. So when looking at the current Office 365 that's deployed, how many are using it for email? How many are using it for their collaboration environment? How many are using it for unified communication? Okay, so and how about social? Anybody using it for social today? Okay, so in our conversations, these are the payloads, what we call payloads, which is those are the parts of the Office 365 value proposition that seem most natural to put into the cloud, simply because when you put a risk profile against a lot of that, they're much lower than what we talk about when we look at final work product, if you're a manufacturer, your standard operating procedures, you know, final content, published content, and records. Those are the things that generally have a higher risk profile in an organization. So what we're saying is there a way that we could do this and meet the needs of the CIO by having something that will deploy rapidly and service the needs of the user, but at the same time meet the needs of the governance, risk, and compliance group? And unfortunately, the timing isn't good because right now Microsoft Legal and Corporate Affairs, our partner and our client, is at this very moment talking about that exact same thing upstairs. So they couldn't schedule us at different times so you could hear this and then you could hear that. They had to do it at the same time. So if you have friends who are attending that one, ask them about that. But when we talk about the practical steps, it's about figuring out what payloads would be most natural to move to the cloud, which would drive the greatest efficiencies for you, which would drive the best cost savings for you, and then find a way where you could potentially keep your final work product on site and have a methodology where as users are working with content through a natural information lifecycle step, that content could move very seamlessly from that environment in the cloud to a final resting place in an archive in an on-prem record center that's DoD certified. That's the kind of architecture that clients are going, you know, that might work. You know, it might work from a governance, risk, and compliance perspective. It also might work from a technical perspective, because if we can get some of our payloads offloaded and get users using it, as we iterate in technology over the years and as improvements and innovations happen from the partner community around Office 365, we can start to move more and more of our content into the cloud. So at this point in time, we're saying, if you want to get it there, it's probably a matter of figuring out what's the right combination of on-prem and in-the-cloud solution that would be able to support your environment. So when we look at the hybrid cloud, collaboration, email, unified communication seem like natural payloads to go to the cloud. They drive great efficiencies, cost savings. They would drive innovation because they would be able to keep up on what's going on. Final content and records on-site and migration from the cloud to on-prem based on a change in lifecycle. So when we talk about lifecycle, if you want to learn more about our mantra, which is information lifecycle management for everyone, visit our booth at 951. And we'll show you that we don't really talk about records when we're implementing enterprise content systems that have a records management element. We really want people to work with Office 365 and all the tools, the business productivity tools that they offer, in a way that's natural to them. And I can tell you from experience, the reason why first generation technologies haven't worked is the adoption's been so low, because it's been so hard. We made it so hard on the users. Everybody had to learn what a file plan was and when to declare a record and where it fit in the file plan. All that stuff just got in the way. So when we're talking about lifecycle steps, we just want them to tell us when they're done with it. If they're working on it and it's still in flight and it's work in progress, then they continue to work on it in their collaborative environment. When they're done with it and they say this is a final document, SharePoint has terrific capability to automatically take it from where it is, put it in the right place, declare it as a record, and leave the stub behind that allows them to get that content. That was the other part of the value proposition before. When they did declare a record, it went in a different system, and then they never saw it again, and they couldn't get it back again. So what was the incentive? There was no incentive. If we want records management to be done at an enterprise level, we got to play with the users in the game they want to play, not the game we want to play. And that is, they want efficiency, they want innovation, they want to be able to do their job faster, they want to find the final valuable content quickly so they can oftentimes learn from it, replicate it, use it as knowledge, create new work product, and move on. They don't want to have to become records managers. So part of the innovation that we're going to be showing you today is just exactly that. So we really believe that over the course of the next 3 to 4 years, as the next generation of the technology evolves and the innovation that generally goes with each of these new releases starts to take place, you're going to see natural steps that will take you there. So right now, there is a good on-prem solution that will allow you to take SharePoint as a platform, make it certified so that you have your governance, risk, and compliance people happy that content can now reside in SharePoint, connect it to your ERP system and your business productivity tools, and go. The next step, we believe, is the most practical step, is to take that same on-prem environment and expose it to Office 365, create an information lifecycle that will allow you to interact between Office 365 and these on-prem environments as we're building out the solutions that will allow us to move to full Azure, full Office 365, fully enabled cloud records management. And we believe that those are going to be evolutionary steps that will take place over the next few years. So, these are probably ideas that you may have heard of on the periphery or never heard of before. So rather than just talk about what we wanted to do, is give Jonathan an opportunity to actually see some of this in action. This isn't sort of just whiteboard. This is actually doable today. And he's going to be able to demonstrate some of that to you right now. So as we're shifting gears, Jonathan, is there anything you want?
Thank you very much, Art. As we get my volume adjusted. I'm going to start with a little bit of an analogy. My fiance believes that I have far too many hobbies and believes those hobbies are far too expensive. One of my hobbies is that I'm a private pilot. I do enjoy flying small airplanes around the sky. You might imagine that it requires a fair amount of training and technical information to be able to at least consistently fly an airplane and land it without cracking it up or hurting yourself. Things like aircraft systems, approach lighting, federal regulations, all these things that you have to know to fly an airplane. And I do. Sometimes. Remember all that. But I also like to take friends up in an airplane. And some friends are brave enough to try that, and they enjoy going up for a little flight. And one of the things that they often want to do is fly the plane. The question you might ask yourself is, how can I let somebody fly the plane when there is so much that has to be known about flying? Well, it turns out, we'll deal with that in a moment, it turns out that to just simply fly a plane around the sky, the rules are actually really simple. You're holding a wheel in your hand. When you push it forward, the houses get bigger. You're getting closer to the ground. And when you pull it back, the houses get smaller. You're getting away from the ground. And the analogy is applicable here because records management and compliance and governance and all these concepts are fairly complex. We just talked a little bit about how the hybrid environment may have your information in both a cloud environment and an on-premise environment. So how do we manage that? What load do we impose upon the users, the business users in that world where we're starting to get more and more systems with our information? And the point is we need to abstract that away. We need to hide that. We need to make it simple for our business users. As Art wound up saying, we don't want to impose records management knowledge on every business user in the community. And so what I'm going to be demonstrating today using our product suites, I'm going to be demonstrating some core concepts of consistency across hybrid, cloud, and premise-based environments. While I'm using our products to kind of show some of these concepts, it is not my intention to just be really a product demo as much as that's a vehicle for showing some of the concepts that are important to consider when we're looking at consistency of our governance and our records management strategies across both cloud and on-premise environments. And we're good. So we're going to start, first of all, by demonstrating how one might ingest information into the cloud. If you attended the keynote, one of the things you saw, which was very cool, was the ability for a user to drag and drop documents onto a library and have those sucked into that library. And that was fabulous, and that's important. But that may not be enough. For example, we may want to make sure that metadata, like classifications or record classifications or security classifications, are set properly. We may want to set some information about the lifecycle automatically. And on the one hand, we could demand that the user do this every time they upload a document, or we could somehow make that process more transparent. And so the first element that I'm going to be demonstrating today is a component called the drop zone in this case. And as a sidebar, the Drop Zone was the first non-Microsoft app in the SharePoint App Store. This Drop Zone here, a demonstration version of it, was the first app in the App Store, which means it does work, for example, in O365, and it does work in an on-prem environment as well. But I can certainly take a document, if I can find my document. There it is. And I can just drop it on there. And magic happens, and it's ingested magically. And behind the scenes, what will have happened is several key attributes will have been set on that. But it's not enough just to be able to drop a document, because sometimes we do require user input. So it's often necessary to allow a user to specify some attributes for that. And I can either define attributes that are applicable across all files. So if I drag and drop 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 files, I might set certain attributes consistently across all those. Or I may have attributes set specifically to each individual file. Or I may just be automatically setting attributes that are entirely behind the scenes that the user doesn't even have to worry about. It's magic. And that's one of the key points here, again, is I'm trying to ensure consistency of my corporate policies. In this case, one might imagine I'm setting security or records center type policies. And I want to make sure that I can do that consistently. And this type of approach that we're demonstrating with the Drop Zone today is a very powerful tool in our toolbox to accomplish that. Similarly, let me go ahead and make this a little bit bigger. I can also go to a document library and I can add a document like you're always familiar with in SharePoint today. If you're familiar with SharePoint, you may know about records libraries. And if I can upload a document, I'm using content types within SharePoint to automatically specify the types of attributes that are required. And I only have to set one thing for this personnel review. I just need to set the employee ID of the reviewer, say me, for example. And then when I do that, apparently I entered one that was too big. There we go. And when I do that, what happens behind the scenes is, again, several key attributes are set automatically on this particular document. So in particular, if I view these properties, you'll notice that the security classification was automatically set as restricted because presumably I don't want employee reviews visible to everybody in the company. That was automatically set based upon where I'm at and where I'm uploading this document. The division was set to human resources, the document classification was set, and the lifecycle, most importantly, was set to work in progress. So one might imagine that this is my collaborative environment, perhaps in O365, perhaps in an infrastructure as a service cloud. But in any event, this is my environment where I work with documents over time. Now, one of the challenges that I might face is when this document is final, when it's complete, whenever it's been approved, whenever it's been accepted, it may become a record that needs to be managed according to records management policies in this organization. So to do that, all I as a business user would have to do is I would run it through its normal life cycle, and whenever I'm done with this document, I would mark it as final. This review has been finalized. It's been given to the employee. And now what's happening behind the scenes is using some facilities built using SharePoint send to functionality, we are actually sending this to an entirely different farm, entirely different SharePoint farm for records, for record centers. So one again might imagine that I'm somehow sending this from an infrastructure as a service cloud into an on-premise cloud, on-premise installation where I want to keep my records. And so if I refresh this, hopefully by now it's taken effect. And we will see that this document has now been replaced by a link. So the business user still has knowledge of where that document was located, but now it's been sent somewhere else, in this case a record center, and stored safely where it can be managed according to consistent policies. So now I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I am going to go to the record center, which apparently has gone to sleep. There we go. So one of the consistent messages that you should be taking away from this session is the word consistent, consistency. If we had a drinking game or a scorecard, I should be saying consistency a large number of times today because that's really the name of the game when it comes to records management and compliance. You want to be able to consistently apply policies. You want to be able to convince legal counsel and courts and opposing counsel that you've been consistent in your application of policy. The key is consistency. So with that end, I might need a tool that I can use in SharePoint to define my governance and records policies and then consistently apply them across my SharePoint environment. Again, the tool that we're showing today is one of our products, but the concepts are the ones that I want you to walk away with. In this case, we have a file plan builder tool. And this file plan builder is used by records managers to define the policies that are being used with records in SharePoint. And the point here is that the records manager doesn't have to be a SharePoint expert. It doesn't hurt to be a SharePoint expert. I saw a records manager developer IT pro in the corner here, which has got to be a rare bird. But many of our records managers aren't SharePoint experts and really don't need to be. Again, we don't need to all be fully fledged licensed pilots. We just need to know how to do our tasks. In this case, the records manager is an expert at records. So let's let them apply that in an environment that they're comfortable with and then have those policies applied across SharePoint. So for example, I may have the concept of periods, the idea of a fiscal year or a calendar year or monthly periods. And the point here is there are certain events in records management that occur periodically. Vital records reviews, for example, are a good example of that. I annually review my vital records to make sure that I'm kept track of them, they're up to date, all the other things that we need to do with vital records. So I want to make sure that the concept of a fiscal year is consistently applied across my farm from a central console, and this is that console. I also had the idea of events, and SharePoint out of the box can implement event-based retention. So in other words, my employee file, for example, after I get terminated or leave GIML voluntarily at some time in the far, far future, my records are kept there for, I don't know what the going is, maybe 7 years. Before being destroyed. And I'm not a records manager, so I don't know if 7 years is realistic, but it's a good number. So 7 years after my termination is when my records are destroyed. So there's an event called Jonathan Brandenburg's termination, or separation, if we want to use something a little less harsh. I can define events for that. I can define events for asset acquisition. I can define events for corporate events like acquisitions and mergers. And we can define those events here in this console, push them out across the farm, and then when they're triggered, things might happen. Reviews and records may be eligible to start their retention period. And I can define those here in this centralized console. I also have the concept of disposition instructions. This is really the, depending upon how many retention buckets you have in your organization, if you subscribe to the bucket theory, you may have 150 retention categories. I've worked with clients that have had 12,000 retention categories. And it's a scary number, I admit, but I've done it. So as opposed to creating 12,000 categories, we can actually create the unique disposition instructions that are applicable across those and reuse them. Again, consistent application in this case of disposition instructions. And we do have the concept of multi-step dispositions in this case. So I might, for example, be able to archive the record but retain the metadata in SharePoint after 5 years, and then after 10 years go ahead and destroy the record entirely. There could be very valid business reasons why you would want to retain the metadata longer than you retain the content. We even have the concept of legal justifications, because you didn't just pull those disposition periods out of a hat. There probably a great deal of legal research went into determining how long you have to keep employee files. We have the ability in this console to allow the records manager to manage those justifications. So I may have an authority code called ACC 200, for example, and if I scroll down just a little bit, I will see that that is justified by two different regulations. I even have the ability to manage the life cycle of legal justifications. I can, for example, I don't see it here. Oh, there it is. I have a status here where I can define the status of a legal precedent and update it. And as I review the impact of that legal status, this life cycle, this requirement is in an updated state until I finally agree that it applies to my legal justifications. I have to have justifications. I mark it as approved. So legal justifications, laws change over time. I have the ability in this console to consistently manage my legal justifications across my disposition policies. Now, all of this eventually comes back together into what's called a file plan. I realize file plan can be an overloaded term, but bear with me. In this case, it is the structure that pulls together all of those pieces to define the filing structure for my records. So, for example, I have accounts payable, accounts receivable, section here in my file plan. And I will see that it's got interesting things like disposition instructions. For example, my legal research indicates I have to retain these particular documents for 6 years. I even have the authority, why that's the appropriate disposition period for the accounts receivable and accounts payable documents. I have the ability to define cutoff criteria. And this is actually, cutoff criteria is an interesting topic because it's actually a carryover from paper documents. Imagine, if you will, you've got a box on your desk and you're processing paper invoices. You might throw those invoices in that box, and then once a week you carry that box down to a records manager, and then they ingest them into the records management, physical records management system. That idea of a weekly cutoff has been carried over into electronic as well. And in fact, the DoD requirements are that you have a cutoff process, that you periodically review records that are eligible to start their retention period and approve that retention start, and that's the cutoff idea. In some ways, less applicable in the electronic world, but many organizations are very comfortable applying consistent processes across both their physical and their electronic records. We even have the ability from this one console to manage the security both within this console itself and within SharePoint. We can actually manage the security applied to the SharePoint record centers and libraries from within this console, and those will get pushed out. I also have, here's my vital records. You heard me talk about vital records. It turns out this little box is not checked today. This is not a vital record container, but you can imagine that I might make it a vital record container. For some reason, my employee records are really important to me, and I'll check this box, and I'll periodically make sure that those records are consistent. And certainly not last, the DoD standard and often has the concept of attribute-based security, so that I can see records that are associated with Project X, but I can't see records that are associated with Project Y. Those types of markings, supplemental markings is what they're often called, or access constraining columns are the technical terms, can be used to manage the security of records in their containers based upon attributes on those records and containers. It's a powerful function, a powerful feature, and one, again, that you can imagine could get out of hand. Imagine if I have multiple farms in the cloud and on-premise, I've got multiple record centers, I've got multiple libraries. How do I ensure that I'm consistently applying these rules around supplemental markings? A centralized console allows me to do that. Again, I'll say it again and again, consistency of application of your policies and records management procedures is what's key here. And that's what I'm demonstrating today. So once I have all these rules defined, I then have to be able to deploy them across my SharePoint environment. I have to be able to instantiate them across my SharePoint environment. So what I might do is I might have a console where I can say, I want this particular folder to contain these kinds of records, I want this library to contain these records, and I want this library to contain these records. I can do that. I can also see, if I can do this right, yep, there we go, where I have previously placed these kinds of records, because it's not uncommon to have SharePoint segregated. My HR records go over here, my legal records go here, my operational records go over here. And this console, again, allows me to see that as a big picture view and push those out consistently, instantiate them consistently. Pardon me. So that's the idea of the file plan builder. This is the console that allows me to build my records management. Thank you very much, Art. Build my records management policies and procedures in one place and push them out to the farm. But there's more to it. There's more to records management. One of the interesting concepts is just because my records are on premise, my legal counsel wants my records to be on premise, that's great. But it doesn't talk about e-discovery. Non-records are discoverable. I have to be able to put holds on non-records, and those may exist in the cloud just as well as on-premise. So one of the things that I can do here, one of the concepts that we have to think about is that idea of a global hold. That's what we call it, the global hold. SharePoint out of the box has a fabulous ability to put records on holds within site collections, but it tends to be a point-in-time function, so you have to extend that or think about how to apply holds across multiple site collections. And in fact, if I wanted to put a hold here, this is Jonathan's lawsuit. Whoa, come back. That was weird. Let's do that again. We'll just quick type something short there. I do have the ability to select multiple record centers and put a hold across multiple record centers all at the same time. But that's not all. This is the really, really fun part in my mind. If I scroll down here, I see this option to set it as a recurring global hold. If I check that box, what happens is SharePoint automatically watches documents as they come into SharePoint. And if those records are susceptible to a hold that I've placed, it will automatically put those incoming records on hold. That's something you can't do out of the box. It's a really nice facility because not only are holds often put on historic records, but they're often put on ongoing records as well, or on ongoing documents, not just records. And this idea of a recurring hold allows me to do that. It watches SharePoint for incoming records and documents and puts them on hold automatically. So one of the other aspects that I've already talked about has been the idea of cutoff and the idea of a cutoff review. We have business users that want to be able to ensure that a record really should be triggered for its retention period. We don't quite trust our automated systems in this point, not because the automated systems themselves are going to do something wrong. It's because we want to make sure that we configured them properly. We want to make sure that we put the right rules into the system because computers will do the bad things we tell them to do. So let's stop that from happening. How do we do that? Well, we review them manually. There's an extra step in there for manual review. And so one of the things that we'll do here is we may have a cutoff review process that before I actually allow a record to be triggered for its retention period, I want to make sure with the human eye that the cutoff criteria were correct, that the event really did trigger, that Jonathan really did separate from Gimmel, for example. And so to that end, there will be a person that can optionally go ahead and approve, in this case you'll see I have approve up there, this particular record or set of records for review. And at this point I'll pause just a little bit and mention the concept of case-based retention or groups of records. Many times we want records to be bundled together and handled as a unit. It's all of my employee file, for example, is a bundle of records. It's not like I approve every individual record for disposition. I want to treat them as a group. So one of the concepts that we have to consider here is the idea of case-based retention. We consider the entire container, the entire folder, as a case, and they're moved as a group, either through cutoff approval or through disposition. And so I might have just approved here, when I click save, I might have just approved all of my employee records of all time for disposition in 7 years. Again, very simple, very consistent application of rules. Not some of my employee records, but all of my employee records are approved for disposition, or in this case, cutoff. And the same thing is true of disposition. So, oops, I don't know what I clicked there. So I can also approve items for disposition. So again, one last chance to make sure this record really should be destroyed. Do I, as an expert user, as a business user, know of a reason this record shouldn't be destroyed? Maybe there's a pending litigation that somehow hasn't quite found its way into the system. But either way, we're hoping that a user, a business user, a business expert can say, yes, it's a good thing to go ahead and destroy that document or that document set. Now, there's some trickiness there. You want to be a little careful about what I'll call conditional approval or conditional destruction. Why is it that all of Jonathan's records were approved for destructions, but none of Art's were? Were you trying to hide something by destroying mine? So I'm always a little sketchy around disposition approvals because then you have to be able to answer those kinds of questions. But it is a tool. It is something that you can use to enforce your policies across your organization. A couple of other things that I'll show you here real quick. Because again, the point here is when I've got my information in multiple locations, cloud, premise, infrastructure as a service, I need to be able to look across those environments. So I may want to look across my environments and determine, run a report and determine which records are coming up for disposition at some point in the future. In other words, how much review work am I going to have to do in this month based upon what the disposition criteria are. So there might be a report here called the as of report in this case that allows me to search for any of the out of the box SharePoint disposition actions that are available, including the started workflow. And we even have a type ahead workflow field here that allows me to specify the delete record with metadata workflow, which is the DoD certified delete record and metadata workflow action. And I can see between a couple of dates, maybe in the future, maybe in the past, maybe a combination of both, I can see how many records are going to be due for disposition in that period of time. So I can apparently not, what did I do wrong? Oh. There we go. I can see in this case I only have two. Not a big surprise there since it's a test system, but you might imagine there are hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of records, and it helps to know that when you're doing staff planning for your year end. And last but not least, there is the idea of search. And SharePoint search is fabulous. SharePoint 2013 has integrated the concept of fast search into its core solution, which for us technical folks, that's a wonderful thing, because dealing with two different search engines has always been a real challenge, one that I'm facing right now, in fact. But 2013 eliminates that, and we have the ability to actually take actions on search results. So again, it's the idea of streamlining the workflow for the user. The user wants to do a search, they want to perform some action on that search. Well, SharePoint search is very good at finding and displaying documents, but it doesn't necessarily allow you to do things with them. So we have the ability potentially to actually add actions to those. Select one or many documents and copy them to a location. Select one or many documents and mark them on hold. Select one or many documents and move them to another location. All those kinds of things can be available here. We also have the ability to even change the view. I might like a view in which it's a tabular format. I can drag my columns around, I can filter, I can sort, I can group my, I can even export the results to Excel. Those are the kinds of things that can reach across hybrid environments and give you a consistent view into your records. So with that, unless I've missed something on my checklist here, I have completed the demonstration of some of the core capabilities that we want to make sure consistently applied across our SharePoint environment, even if it's a complex hybrid environment. So with that, I'm going to take a deep breath, drink some of the water Art kindly gave me, and see if we have any questions. Yes, sir.
Sure. Thank you, Alan.
Repeat the question.
Thank you very much. That's awesome. As a matter of fact, anything I miss, you can pick up a data sheet at our booth 951 that will give you this. It took us a while to work with Microsoft to actually develop this data sheet, because SharePoint 2010 does tremendous things with records management. They made huge quantum leaps forward. But when it comes to certification, there are certain things, certain key things that we're missing, and as I say, in the gap analysis we uncovered. So if we were to work through them and talk about, you know, DoD versus SharePoint 2010 out of the box, you know, some of the key elements that we're missing were the notion of event-based retention. So when you think about event-based retention, it's about what's going to happen in the future that starts the clock ticking on my records, because not everything is done by weeks, months, and years from the time it's created. There's something in 40%, I would say, you know, from our records management, putting my records management hat, about 40% of any records retention schedule, their retention periods will be event-based. And that means that if you don't do that, if you don't have a tool like ours, you have to custom build something that will drive the event side of your records retention period. That can be very expensive. Other things like vital records. You can jump in anytime. As we're going through the notion of case-based retention, as an example, the notion that if you're going to dispose of records and you need somebody to approve it before it gets destroyed, the notion of having every email and every Word document associated with something presented to a user that they have to approve the destruction is a bit unusual. So the idea of case-based retention, where projects or case files can be presented to user as a case, they can approve the disposition of that content, and everything in that folder becomes approved at the same time, same sort of thing. The other part of it is holds. We talked about some of the global hold capability. There's also, in a lot of cases, people, when they want to place hold on, they want to place a hold on a whole container. So a record that is created and is stored within a record center, if you want to be able to put everything within a particular category on hold, you can simply go in and place the container on hold, and it will inherit those holds all the way down. These are just sort of normal records management practices, if you think about it from a physical records side, that's the way it was. If you put a box on hold, all the folders in the box went on hold. If you put a folder on hold, all the documents within the folder went on hold as well. Well, we're extending that to digital records as well.
And I'll add only one more point, which is outside of compliance suite, there's a governance component as well, which is when you're creating new site collections or new sites, whenever users are creating sites rapidly, how do you ensure that those sites are created consistently and in compliance with your policies? Maybe you don't want the user to have access to certain things on the site settings page. You want those automatically removed every time you create a new site. Maybe you want certain libraries or content types always present because that's what your corporate policy demands, that you're tracking your record types by content types. Those kinds of things can be enforced through deployment. Thank you very much for the question, which was how do we add on top of SharePoint?
And if, again, I'll reiterate, if you'd like to come by booth 951, we have a data sheet that's far more articulate than we are in explaining what those differences are.
Thanks, Art.
Yes, sir. Email, that's an excellent question. Part of the DoD 5015 standards, you have to have the ability to declare an email as a record, to also be able to separate the attachments related to that record, and potentially file them in a different part of the file plan during that declaration process. So we have a connector that provides the ability to drag and drop records, emails that are records, into a drop zone, for lack of a better term, within the public folder section of Outlook. It ingests it into SharePoint automatically, and based on the metadata that has been extracted automatically during that process, they can be routed to the appropriate library, and in the event that it is a record, that it can actually declare it directly into the record center itself.
And the idea of this file plan builder console that we showed earlier is actually designed explicitly to be able to support multiple destinations. So that file plan, those policies can be applied to SharePoint in SharePoint's way, potentially Exchange or other sources and following their mechanisms as well. So the idea again is you've got this central console that pushes out rules to multiple destinations.
And that's a really good example of how cloud to on-prem can be very seamless, because that drag and drop could be out of an Office 365 Outlook environment like the one that I work in every day, and by dragging and dropping it into that zone, it'll automatically route it to an on-prem record center to apply the records retention policy for that, and the archive can be managed on site at that point.
We had a question in the corner. Are there any plans to go to 5015.3? Are you talking about version 3 of the standard? Oh, the classified. Oh, chapter 3 is what you meant for that. Yes,
chapter
yes.
3.
I don't know what I can say about that.
Well, we're scheduled. We actually just applied, and we're waiting for a date to take through for chapter 3 right now. So it looks like the first available date is sometime in and around the middle to end of the first quarter. So it looks like that's when we're going to be scheduled. So we anticipate by the second quarter of next year being Chapter 3 certified as well. Good.
Very good.
Awesome. And for those that don't know, in the federal government, there's a baseline DoD certification, and then there are two other levels of certification. One is called Chapter 3 for classified records and Chapter 4 for FOIA. We went through for baseline Chapter 2. We also have 5, which is the ability to transfer content out of SharePoint in a more inclusive way. So in other words, not just the content, but the metadata bag, so that it can be transferred. Federal governments can transfer, agencies can transfer them to NARA, but this is configurable, so commercial agents who may want to be able to transfer their content out of SharePoint and maybe to a secondary environment or into the cloud, they have the ability to export content in a record-like way to get it out and into a secondary system.
There was a question here. Yes, sir.
Yes. I mean, the work we did in integrating with Iron Mountain was always of the understanding that it was not going to be exclusive to Iron Mountain clients. There's a technology we integrate with called AccuTrack that happens to be a technology that is owned by Iron Mountain, but it is actually integrated so that if you have a box sitting in Iron Mountain or in another facility, like their competitors are known as Archive Systems, Recall, they will use software products, and one of those software products that is dominant in all Iron Mountain competitors is a product called O'Neill. And this AccuTrack product integrates to both the Iron Mountain backend system called SKP and O'Neill. So clients can click a button, say request, and the phone will ring either at Iron Mountain or at an archive systems or a recall, and they will know immediately who to deliver it to. But that's all being delivered as one user experience through SharePoint, and that all the disposition instructions and policies and cutoffs, all the rules that you saw applied, apply across the spectrum of both physical and electronic media. So SharePoint is the engine, and then we connect through this broker, which is called AccuTrack, to do the physical records heavy lifting and to integrate to those back-end systems. Absolutely. Yeah, AccuTrack has the ability to help you manage your record centers, your file rooms, barcoding, you know, check in, check out, all that physical records management stuff that I'm glad I got away from.
Other questions, please?
Yes, sir. That's a really good question. We're proud to say that we were one of the early members of the TAP, and we were part of the Partner Advisory Board for SharePoint 2010 before it was disassembled and made part of the TAP. We're ready when they are. As a matter of fact, we think it's overdue. The sooner they can get here, the better, because, again, certification of an on-prem 2013 is high on our priority list. It's a matter of we can't schedule with JITIC, which is a test organization, until they've released SharePoint. Because we're completely reliant on the underlying 2013 capability, we can't schedule anything until it's in full release. So we can't get our date until 2013 is released, but we're going to be first one in line. And again, the difference is that our solution will keep the content inside SharePoint, so anybody wanting to do all those other things you want to do with SharePoint, we don't get in the way of any of that.
And to additionally answer the question of when are we going to be 2013, some of our products, actually I shortly demonstrated one of our products, the Governance Suite, in 2013. It is built and running in 2013 now. It's not released, but it's being demonstrated right now. There's also, as you might imagine, levels of 2013 support, right? Do we support on-prem? That's on the roadmap, certainly, and it's in the near term. Cloud is also on the roadmap. That's going to require some restructuring, but we're very excited about the opportunities that presents as well.
So there's some really exciting stuff that falls into what we think is ideal for us, because governance, risk, and compliance, some of the new features of 2013, like the new site mailboxes and the new e-discovery features, we're just salivating over the ability to get in there and make those better for the clients, because there's a lot of really good stuff there, just like there was a lot of really good records management stuff in 2010, but there's still some work to be done for it to be kind of prime time ready. And that's the kind of thing that we're committed to doing as a company, is we're going to make that little bit better to make people more comfortable using those features in full enterprise capability.
We'll stay here. We have this room for certainly 10 more minutes, exclusively ours, and then we can probably hang out in the hallway after that. Feel free to track us down with questions. We'll be glad to answer those. I do want to encourage you to offer evaluations on this session.
Please.
We do like your feedback. And thank you very much. We do appreciate